Welcome back to Enlighten Up for episode 62, White Magic, Spells, Symbolism, and Out-of-Body Experiences with Joe Roop. Joe Roop is the host of the radio show Lighting the Void, and I am excited to have him on the show with us at Enlighten Up. He had me on his show last month, and today he's going to join us and talk to us all about white magic. He has a great definition for what magic is, which makes it really easy for just the average person to get on board with the idea of magic. We're going to go into spells. Do they work? And if they do, are they used for good or are they not used for such good? And we're going to talk about symbolism and the idea behind the programming of the subconsciousness through symbolism. And later on, he's going to share with us some of his out-of-body experiences. What did he see and how did that happen? All of this is coming up in episode 62, so let's jump right in and hear what Joe has to share with us. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Enlighten Up. I am Nicole Frolic, and I am here, of course, with my favorite co-hosts, Lisa and Brian. And today we are joined by a special guest, Joe Roop of Lighting the Void, a radio show. I was actually a guest on his show last month, and I just love the conversation and all of the insight and wisdom he has to share. And so I wanted to bring him on our show because he is going to talk about a very interesting topic that we have yet to discuss on the show, and it is called white magic. You know, a little bit about Joe. He doesn't consider himself an expert in any field, except apparently the female field, but that's kind of, we'll talk about that. But he basically got a start after listening to a lot of late night shows on Coast to Coast when Art Bell was around. And, you know, he started out in the temples of modern day mystery schools, learning the esoteric, and that slowly opened doors to ufology and the paranormal. He's a huge fan of the paranormal. And I love this quote, Joe, we'll talk about it in a second, from Whitley Strieber, but beliefs are walls and questions are doorways. I love it. Joe, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you very much. I like that introduction. That was very nice. It's actually an expert in the female form. It's unless it's that's what I was supposed to put there. But
no,
that does
sound good. I probably changed it. I my higher self may have told me to change it just so that you could clarify it. Yeah. But yeah. So you're an expert in the female form, are you?
Well, I mean that's just a funny little quote for any man, because like when you, if you're a jack of all trades or you study a lot of different things, I mean, there's only one thing you can sit around and talk about with guys. And that's, I mean, you know, girls. I mean, we've been doing that since we were kids, and girls talk about boys, and that's just the way it is. It's pretty much the only thing that I could be considered an expert in, I would think. It's kind of a joke, really.
Most men think that, you know, they can never really understand women. So that's surprising to hear you say that.
I don't think that at all. I think women are very easy to understand.
I love that book. It's like, you know, everything men know about women, you know, it's 100 pages long or whatever, and you open it up and every page is blank.
Yeah. It's a good gag gift, really, yeah. Actually. But no, I don't think it's that hard. I think it's, you know, women from an energetic point of view, if you want to, I guess, look at it in an esoteric sense, you know, they represent the chalice. They represent emotion and accepting. You know, a lot of times, if you're around a woman, they'll be like, I just don't like the feeling of this. You know, they go with their feelings more than they do logic, you know, and that's the one thing. When I say logic, I don't mean that in a mean way, because a lot of times we need to listen to our feelings and the logic gets in the way. And so that's one of the things that I've learned.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I think that's the biggest differentiator between men and women is feelings and logic.
But I will say that I'm one of those analytical guys too. So after, I guess my first divorce, I didn't want to feel that anymore. So I'm one of those guys that take like classes and study everything and do homework. And I really went on like, I'd say a 2 or 3 year escapade of trying to really understand women. And believe it or not, I would do homework assignments and all kinds of things and treat it like a scientific experiment. And that was a long time ago.
And how is that working out for you?
Well, it worked out good then, not so much now, because here's the thing. You can understand so much about women in general, but each person individually is different. So that's a whole nother challenge. But, you know, as far as attracting women or going on dates or just being around women, I love women. I don't have to even be going on dates with them. I just like hanging out with them, and I'm different like that. My friends have always made fun of me because of it.
Aw, well, going on to another topic, your let's talk about this, how you got into your own show.
Like, oh, yeah.
How did that all like start? Like, what, I mean, you listened to Art Bell and all of that. Where was your main interest? Like, what really kind of spiked that passion?
Well, the main interest was, you know, I didn't know anything about Art Bell at first. I was one of the late bloomers when it came to realizing who Art Bell was. So it was in the 2000s when I actually discovered Art Bell, not in the 90s when everybody else
did. Well, I don't even know who Art Bell is, so maybe you can start with an introduction of who he is.
Well, I mean, Art Bell was the first person to take late night radio into the esoteric and paranormal and strange topics, you know.
Oh, okay.
Larry King was, he kind of touched it, I guess, a little bit, but when he went out, because he used to do radio, Art Bell started in regular news and sports, and he just kind of decided, you know what, I want to talk about the stuff I'm interested in, you know, spirit science, the paranormal, ufology, and he went with it, and it turned into this massive syndicated radio show that went on for 10 to 15, I'm going to know it's like 20 years, actually. And he became the biggest name in that. He just recently passed away, though.
Yeah, he just recently passed away. So with, you know, because when I was on your show, we were talking about a bunch of different topics, but it sounded to me like the paranormal was quite interesting to you. Where were your interests then, and where do you find, have they changed, or are they still the same as to where you are now?
Actually, it's back. It's kind of backwards for me, because when I started this thing, I was into the esoteric and spirit science way more. And then I discovered, as I started listening to the guests that, let's say, Art had on, I'd be like, okay, here's another person talking about UFOs and aliens, but it's Art Bell, so I'm going to listen, right? And so I would listen, because it's my favorite show. And I started noticing that it all kind of ties together. And what I mean by that is, the last time that I spoke to Whitley Strieber on Lighting the Void, he's starting to understand that these beings that he met or ran into are all part of something bigger and greater that have to do with consciousness. And see, there's this thing about me that I don't really want to go out and tell everybody my truth, so to speak. I'm more of a 4-10 mindset, like, hey, we need to start asking better questions, right? And I got that from a book. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's a book called Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh. I don't know if you've ever read it or not.
I've read it.
But there's a part in there, and whether he talked to God or not, that, you know, that's, I guess that's up for you, for whoever, the reader, to decide. But there's a part in there that really got to me, where God supposedly told him and said, look, I can't tell you my truth until you stop telling me yours.
Hmm.
Right. And that really hit home to me. And it just opened up, like, I just need to start asking more questions instead of understanding, like making beliefs. Because beliefs, as soon as we believe something or we have faith in some type of paradigm or structure, then we, doesn't mean it's a bad thing, but we do shut ourselves away from everything else when we do that, that's not related to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. That's why I love that quote from Whitley. Like, it just, I never obviously seen it before. And it just really resonated. Truth. I was like, wow, it's so true that a lot of times we get caught up in our beliefs, and many times our beliefs are really good for us for a certain part of our life, but then we outgrow them and they no longer serve us. And it's time to, you know, that's when we start have to question things and start shifting the way we're perceiving everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that totally.
So tell me about this white magic, because It's actually something I don't know a lot about. We have never discussed it on our podcast. So I'm just really excited and curious to hear what you have to say about it and share with us.
Well, yeah, sure. So the first thing I would say is what is magic? Like, is it Harry Potter? Because when people hear that, they think stage magic or Harry Potter magic. And it's really true esoteric, I guess you could say, magic, or what's called occult science, isn't really either one of those. But it's tapping into, the system behind consciousness to either do one or two things: to manifest something in your life or manifest something in somebody else's life, or to increase an awareness of who you really are and to your true self. And in my opinion, you know, people have called, there's other people that have different opinions about this. They say there's no such thing as black or white magic. There's just magic, just like there's no such thing as black or white gravity. There's just gravity. But the kind of magic I'm talking about is the magic that you hear about when you think, oh, there's some guy out in the woods drawing a circle and doing some type of chant. It's just really weird. And, you know, it's very, very misunderstood, but it's been going on since the caveman era. And there is, in my opinion, a white form of that magic, which is all about love and all about ascension and all about manifesting good things in your life and in other people's lives.
As opposed to?
as opposed to curses, right?
Black magic.
You know, there are such things as people trying to curse or hurt other people. It gets kind of wishy-washy when you say you do a spell or you do a ritual for a new car, right? So there's a moral discussion that some people could say, oh, that's black magic, or that's white magic, or that's gray magic. Well, you know, do you need that car to get your family to school or in work? And, you know, that to me is just kind of redundant. It really doesn't matter. But I would say black magic is definitely when you do something like a spell or a ritual, or you even have the will to interfere with somebody else's will, life, and love. Yes. And so it's like the total opposite to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because as much as I've been on this kind of like spiritual path, self-awareness, self-discovery, exploring all the different things, you know, from energy as far as like into ETs and things like that. It wasn't until the late 2016, middle to late of 2016, that I came to realize, oh, black magic actually exists. Like, their curses are a thing. And I really, up until that point, had just refused to believe in it. And I was like, no, I just don't believe it. Like, I just really don't believe that stuff actually exists. But then, like, my eyes were kind of opened and I realized, oh, no, there is something to all of this. There's a reason why people have so many stories about this and why it's such a, like, books and books and books have been written about it.
It makes me think of the movie Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. The old lady, the voodoo practitioner, and they have to go to the graveyard for her to do the magic. And she's talking about, like, you only get half an hour around, you know, 15 minutes before midnight and 15 minutes after midnight, and the 15 minutes before midnight are for doing good, and the 15 minutes after midnight are for doing bad.
I'm with you, Nicole. I never believed in that stuff until recently either. I refused to believe there was even negative entities or, you know, the devil type thing. I just didn't believe that that was a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And, weren't we shocked out of that belief?
So what happened? What made you guys believe in it now?
For me, it was, I had a friend of mine who started talking about her experience with skinwalkers. And I just, like, looking at her and I'm just like, what? I go, this stuff really exists? And she's like, oh yeah. And I'm like, huh. And, you know, I really valued her opinion and what she'd done some great healing work with me. And I just was like, what? And I just started to play around with it. And then, you know, as soon as you open the door to one thing, it's like all these things start conspiring to show you if it exists or not. Like, I just, it's like you call it into your energy field and all of a sudden all this other stuff starts coming in. And I've had experiences with negative entities. I've seen with my physical eyes one, like as recently as like, I think I talked about it on your show, like at the beginning of this or the end of last year. And so I'm very well aware that this stuff definitely exists, but I totally get, because I was there, the perspective of people who just say that stuff doesn't act. Like, you just think it's there, but it's not. I could totally.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be like an attack from, say, a person. I mean, it could be a bad planetary alignment. It could be something generational. It could be self-inflicted. And so it's almost better that the people that don't believe in it stay that way.
Ignorance, right? Because for sure.
Right. Because what happens is when you realize it's real, I've seen even some people get into this psychosis to where they're freaking out 24/7. Like, they really believe there's nothing they can do about it. And they've got to go to some specialist to get rid of this curse, like a magician or a witch or a priest or something. And they get, and it was better when they just didn't even know about it to begin with.
Well, let me address it from the point. I mean, I think I have an interesting point because obviously I am a see to believe type of person, or ignorance is bliss. I've said that a number of times, some of my catchphrases. I actually feel differently about this, and I can you know, understand what you're saying about some people get freaked out about it. And it's not that I don't believe in magic. It's just, I love science fiction, and to me, it almost falls more into this idea of science fiction. You know, when I think of Star Trek and some of these things, I was like, well, what are we going to be able to do in the future? And then I loved the whole Harry Potter series and just that idea. And to me, it's more like a romantic idea. It's like, well, sure, I'm sure there's people around, you know, doing something. It doesn't affect my day-to-day life. I'm going to take a very different stance than I have, I think, on a lot of things we've talked about, where I think it has to. I think it's something that has to probably exist, but it doesn't affect me in one way or the other. But that being said, I loved your definition. If you look at magic from your definition, it makes it that much more plausible and understandable. You know, it's not about, you know, a wizard with a wand, you know, and shooting colored lights out of the end of it. You know, it's just the idea of manifestation. Right. You know, if that's what magic is, and that's something we've talked about, and that's something Lisa and I, you know, try to do, and that's something she, you know, that she and Nicole have helped me to understand, that this is something that can be done. If that's what magic is, well, yeah, that's easy.
So white magic is basically manifesting.
Yeah. And black magic is manifesting in an evil way. I mean, you're, the way that you described, you know, a curse, you're basically trying to manifest ill on somebody else. That's basically what a curse is.
Right.
So
people do that all the time without even really knowing it, just through, from what I understand, like psychic attacks and things like that. Like, thinking negative thoughts about someone and sending it to them.
There you go.
Is that black magic? Unknowingly.
Well, you have to understand, like, first of all, even from a scientific level, we don't know exactly what it is, but we know that everything is energy, like in its true form. And then, you know, like a physicist and scientist, Thomas Campbell, who's, you know, I just got through speaking with actually yesterday, is out to prove that this is, you know, a consciousness type of virtual reality system. Now, there's a lot of people that are able to, I guess what you'd say, have out-of-body experiences or astral travel. And the reason why a lot of these old sages kept what they called a book of shadows and a dream journal is because once they started writing these things down, they started putting things together, right? Like, it's like you have so many experiences, and if you approach it from, like, with a scientific method, you'll start to see that there's some type of underlying let's just say software, if you will, that's running this whole thing, that's based on principles of the subconscious. This is kind of what Plato understood with the arcana, you know, and numbers and even geometrical shapes like circles, squares, the pentagram, things like that, that it's all in nature. It's through everything. So there's definitely the Hermetic idea that this is all one big system of consciousness. Now, we're in the densest part in the physical realm. So in order to manifest things into this physical realm, it has to come through a set of laws that's already here. You know, they can be broken here or there, but it just depends on also who's viewing it too, who's observing what's happening. So it gets kind of complicated. But the magician understands what he can do to stack the deck against his subconscious to cause a manifestation in his life that normally wouldn't happen if he wasn't aware of these things, or his or her life, actually.
That's very interesting, because I know that, like, for instance, when you talk about the quantum field and understanding that, you know, it needs an observer. So that makes sense that the manifestation will, and the breaking of the laws will depend on the actual observer.
Yeah. Yeah. This is something I just got through talking with Thomas Campbell about, because the human potential, I mean, it's already been proven. There've been records, physical records, like track stars, or you name it, that things are impossible.
The 4-minute mile.
Right, like this is impossible. And as soon as one person breaks it, the whole paradigm shifts. Right. No longer becomes impossible. Other people catch up to it. So there's something there, right? So a magician kind of works alone in solitude to do these types of things. As a matter of fact, they even tell you you're not supposed to talk about your magic. Like, what I'm doing now is probably not smart, according to back in the day, because now your brain and whoever else's listening mind is involved in what I'm talking about. So if I go in the astral realm, or if I do certain things now, I got to deal with this stuff. I don't necessarily believe all that, because a lot of more people are aware of this thing. And we call it magic now because we don't understand it. But I think in 100 years, it won't be called magic anymore. It'll be just like, you know, me trying to explain a cell phone back in the 1600s. Like, look, I want to talk to somebody who's not here right now. Well, they're going to laugh at me and put me in the stocks, you know. But a few hundred years later, it comes to pass. It's no longer magic. It's real, you know.
Like, telepathy is something that, from what I understand, is the way that we used to communicate. But something came along and changed our belief, changed the fact that we could do that. We no longer believed it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, you know, there's all kinds of different types of magic. There's ceremonial magic, where you do rituals and ceremonies. You can see this stuff in the church, the Catholic Mass. It's even in Protestant churches. Then there's,
I think that's a really interesting comparison, that is what's different, other than the church wants you to think it's not magic, but how is that different? How is that ritual any different from, you know, a quote unquote witch performing a ritual? It's exactly the same thing. That's a really, really great point.
Yeah, they're using color, symbolism, sound, smells, you know, incense. They're working on your emotions. They're doing all of these things to tap into your subconscious. I mean, I've been to a Catholic Mass before in a very big church, you know, with the organs and everything, and it's really moving. So why are all these priests doing what the ancient priestcraft used to do in Egypt? But they tell us, you shouldn't practice magic, but it's okay if we practice your magic. And I think that in a lot of religions, you'll see the big figures that have changed things, like the Jesus story in Christianity changed the foundation. It changed everything. But there's also a book about how he was a magician. Buddha changed everything. All of these people in my mind were great magicians, and they understood how to interact and how to change their reality and anybody else's reality based on faith and based on by tricking the subconscious. Do you ever wonder why, like, I don't know if you guys read the Bible or not, but when he made the guy see, right? Why did he rub his hands in the dirt with his thumbs or whatever and his fingers and then rub the dirt on the guy's eyes and all of a sudden he can see? Why didn't he just snap his fingers and say you could see?
Ritual.
That represented something. And that is the language that talks to the spirit or consciousness that's behind this whole sub-program or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I was someone who really didn't believe in the whole ceremony aspect, and I didn't really think there was much to it. And it's so interesting, though, that when your eyes are opened and something kind of like, I don't even know how to describe it, but kind of wakes up inside of you, and you just all of a sudden just see things in a completely different way. And I, you know, just even just the simple use of fire. Mm-hmm. You know, fire, and we all use fire, you know, whether you're just sitting around a bonfire and, you know, people think, oh, you just use it for heat or, you know, whatever, but it's really a form of ceremony in a way that is a way of bringing people together. And, you know, if you think about when you're around a bonfire, people share stories, people open up. And there's also this interesting vibe around the fire. I just don't know how to describe it, but it's almost like anything could happen.
Yeah, it's a sacred thing. Mm-hmm. You know, this is why shamans and Native Americans and people since the beginning of time, when they light a fire, they do some type of ritual or dance, is because that fire represents something real on this earth, right? Because actually those elements are a part of us too. But it also represents something very powerful. I mean, at its base, especially here, everything is pretty much, you know, earth, fire, air, and water. And fire is something sacred. It represents something sacred. And for people that really don't believe in ceremony and the effectiveness of it, if you've ever been to an opera, a ballet, a concert, anything that's moved you emotionally, how did it feel? Did it affect your life? Did it change your outlook on things? Did it do anything to you? Did it affect you? Absolutely, it did. Absolutely. I can tell you some of the best shows I've ever seen and the best moments. Art, when you look at it, there's some art that just speaks to you, right? Mm-hmm. So what a magician does is they flip the script. They become, I guess you could say that when they're in the circle, if you're doing ceremony, they actually become authoritative at that moment. And they're telling the universe, hey, this is what I want. Okay. And this is what I want to do by the authority that the universe has already given them, using symbols that the universe understands, whether it's smells, what you look at, what you feel. And it's crazy because the more you get into it, like say, the more you put your emotion into it and put that energy into it, the more it activates. And then the other trick is, because it's the whole left brain, right brain thing, you got to actually let it go. And I mean, let it go. Don't just say, when's it going to happen? I'm trying to manifest this. It's never. You have to let it go. And that's where faith comes in.
So when you,
and then that's what,
so happens. When you practice manifestation, do you use symbolism and sounds and smells?
Absolutely. Yeah. If I really want something to change in my life. Yeah, absolutely.
So
I'll use incense. I'll use candles. I'll use mantra. I may even draw a circle for protection because everybody knows what a circle is, right? We can agree that we all know what a circle is, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. It sounds okay. Like
all right. So that's somewhere
like
we can start. So it's not a trick question, though. So in the beginning of time, the circle has been used by even the cavemen. So think about all of these minds agreeing what the circle represents. That's the power of it. And that circle is also all in our universe. It's Alpha Omega. It represents protection, authority, infinity, you know, everything. And so the magician uses that circle to protect themselves from any harm that's going to happen or whatever they're trying to protect themselves against. It's almost like I'm drawing God and my authority right here.
So you just draw a circle on a piece of paper, or you're drawing a circle that you're sitting inside of?
You can do both. If you're doing like sigil magic, you can definitely draw a circle on a piece of paper. If you're doing a ceremony, then you would draw a circle around yourself.
Or you could put candles kids do around this stuff, yourself right? in the form of a circle yep. or crystals. Some people do that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that yep. why people sit in circles when they do ceremonies as the protection? Yeah,
I think that people do it for all kinds of reasons. But my point is when it comes to the arcana and archetypes, what does that circle represent? Like on a platonic scale, it represents everything. It is the symbol for everything. You know, infinity. So it's God, Alpha and Omega. It's protection. Like, that's why they use it. And then you wonder why, and then you get into the other symbols that really scare people, like pentagrams and hexagrams. Well, it's only scary when you see a magician drawing it on a piece of paper. It's not scary when you see a sheriff wearing it, or you see the pentagram on your American flag. You see it everywhere. But for some reason, when a magician does it, it's freaky. It doesn't really make sense, does it?
It must be part of this programming that is trying to keep us away from knowing our own power, I think.
Well, but it's what's interesting is it's the two symbols combined, the pentagram inside of the circle, I think is what freaks people out.
Well, you have like mm-hmm. a sheriff's badge with its round.
Yeah, all that is a symbol for the microcosm. You know, it's a symbol of a man. It's the symbol of the four elements plus spirit. Inside that is a pentagon, which inside that is another pentagram, basically. So the pentagram is the circle. The pentacle is the star. For instance, do you ever wonder why the pentagon is shaped the way it is? Why did they make it that shape?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Well, the pentagon represents war. The pentagram represents on the tree of life in Kabbalah. It represents that sphere of Gevura, Mars, and war. So what they're doing is telling the world and the universe that we are the symbol. This right here, this little area, this is our symbol, letting all of you know subconsciously that we're going to be the gods of this thing, war. Right? And that's kind of like a really messed up way to look at it, because I don't think it's evil what they did at all, but they stacked the deck magically when they built that building, and they do it with lots of buildings, especially mm-hmm. in Greece.
What are your thoughts on symbolism, its effect on our subconscious, and then certain symbols being hijacked, like really positive symbols being hijacked so that we don't view them that way?
Well, I can tell you one of the most positive symbols that got hijacked was the swastika.
Yeah, the swastika, yeah.
That was an old Hindu symbol for the universe. And, you know, it was kind of almost just as powerful as the circle. In fact, you know, some people use it still today, like the Golden Dawn, the Rosicrucians, but they have to hide it because when people see it, they think, oh, they're Nazis or something, because they don't understand that that symbol is ancient. That wasn't meant for Hitler to have, but did he use it in an occult way? Absolutely. Absolutely. Everybody that looked at that flag, you don't think universe now. What do you think?
Hitler.
There you go. That's his power. It gave him power.
Yeah. And so like it steals that opportunity from anyone else who'd want to use that to their benefit, but they don't, because they obviously view it as negative and no one wants to be aligned with Hitler.
Exactly.
There's a great scene in, the Da Vinci Code in the book and in the movie, where Dan Brown, is a symbologist, and he's showing slides. You know, that was one of the examples he gave, was the Hindu symbol for peace. And you know, he would show the symbol and ask the students, well, what does this mean? And I mean, it's a great scene, because there are so many that, you know, he showed the trident, and people saw it and they said the devil, you know, and he zoomed out and it was, you know, it was the pitchfork, the trident pitchfork of, and he showed a hooded figure, you know, white pointed hood. And they're like, you know, KKK hatred. And they zoomed out and it was some, old priest garb and, you know, in Spain or something like that. So there's interpretation and reinterpretation and misinterpretation that happens, I think has happened throughout history.
Right. But seeing that's the thing is the occultist or magician, whatever you want to call them, understand these things. And I think it's a time to, and I'm not the only one doing this. There's a lot of people that are talking about this. It used to happen inside lodges and things. So they would be in protection. So they didn't have to deal with the outside world trying to burn them or kill them and really get to understand the truths behind all of these symbols and what's going on and the history and our origins. And that's kind of where esoteric masonry came into play, and the Templars, and that, you know, they had to protect these things with their death sometimes, because they knew that if the secret got out, it would be covered up by the church. You know, you heard the Templar stories of, well, they confessed to worshiping the devil and spitting on the cross, and the priests burned them at the stake and burned their toes, just horrid, mm-hmm. you know, Friday the 13th stuff. Yeah. Well, why do you think they did that? Like they made an oath to protect certain things with their lives so that they knew a time would come when a larger awareness would happen, when it would be okay to talk about these things in the open like you and I are now. If you and I were discussing this back then, what do you think would happen to us? If we even toyed with the notion of this is actually okay.
We'd be killed.
Killed.
Yeah. We'd be hunted down and killed. So we're in a different time now. I think it's time.
Thank goodness
to talk
for that.
Yeah.
For
sure.
Yeah. I actually have past life memories where I've had visions, but also like cellular feelings of speaking up the truth and being either killed for it or put into solitary confinement for it.
And really? So, that's fascinating.
That is fascinating.
So it's like, it's, I think it was one of the biggest roadblocks. I don't want to say the biggest, but it was definitely one of the roadblocks to me finally using my voice in this lifetime to speak about what I'm speaking about now, which, you know, for all of us, it's no big deal. But to the average person who isn't, you know, knowledgeable on any of this stuff would think you're crazy. And so I was, it triggers some of those old feelings of like, you're going to die. Literally from past lives. And so it's, I think that's something that many people who are trying to talk about these sort of things that in the past you would be killed for. It's not just about, oh, you're going to be ostracized from the society. It's like there's a cellular remembrance of past lives that you were killed because of this, literally
it's in
killed.
Your DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also buried in a lot of our religious texts, too. The New Testament, some of that stuff is buried in there, and symbolism and numerology. And, they buried that stuff in there for a reason. It's like they knew a time was coming when we would all wake up to it. And I think a lot of us are waking up to these things now. But still, I mean, I'm talking to you guys, but if you were to, let's say, come over to my house and view me doing a ceremony, it would still seem weird to you, right? So this is why, and just by viewing it, well, what's this guy doing? He's got, incense in his hand and he's saying these certain things, and it just it's going to be weird to a viewing audience, but a practicing magician, this is for them and them alone. It's kind of like the whole singing in the shower thing. You do that, you don't want to do that in front of a crowd, right? That's your moment. So that's kind of what I would say ceremonial magicians do. It's a very individual and I would tell you hermetic journey.
I think more people probably do it than they realize. Like maybe you have a certain ceremony you go through before you meditate, whether it be, you know, protecting yourself or clearing, you know, using sage or something like that. You know, we're probably all performing these rituals without really thinking that we are.
Well, you know, that's why, I mean, your definition of magic is what makes it eye-opening, you know, to be able to, yeah, that idea, somebody might go, you can go and buy, you know, a sage stick at Whole Foods and somebody wants to smudge their new apartment.
Right.
Okay. And you know, with your definition, that's magic. And that in and of itself can be settling. If you told them that's magic, no, it's not. I'm just, you know, whatever.
Right. You know, and another problem that we run into is that the people that revealed these secret teachings out in the open were people like Aleister Crowley. So Israel Regardi did it too, but Aleister Crowley was so profound and so out there that he got noticed by the public more. So it really hurt a lot of, in my opinion, a lot of practice magicians, that they get drugged through the mud because when you think ceremonial magic, or certain people think that, that's what comes in their mind. Aleister Crowley, you know, deep, dark, satanic rituals. And there's, I mean, even in a lot of Crowley's work, there was nothing satanic to it at all, but he would still toy with the public just because he could, because he was a megalomaniac, you know, and it caused a lot of harm to, I guess you could say, the image of magicians.
Yeah, it's that programming that, you know, if that's your first impression with it, it's very hard to form a different impression once that's been kind of programmed into the mind. It takes a lot to kind of move past that to see it in a different way.
Yeah, we also can't forget about like theurgy and thaumaturgy. So theurgy is a practice where they would invoke god forms. And if you look, you know, the Egyptian and, well, I think in college it was like Hindu. Hinduism is the oldest religion in the world. And so they would invoke these gods, not God, but, you know, gods, which are really aspects of the one God. And they would invoke these things inside of them to either manifest something or understand something or try to enlighten themselves. And that was the practice of theurgy. Now, this was practiced in ancient Egypt. Sumeria, it's been practiced for a long time. In Christianity, when you invoke God, people invoke, they invoke God into them, and, you know, in the name of Jesus. So it's been practiced forever, but it's a scary sounding when you think about it, right? Like, I'm going to invoke Thoth, and I'm going to do this chant and blah, 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 blah. But what does Thoth represent in my subconscious? The God of wisdom and communication and language. And so I'm trying to understand something intellectually, and raise my awareness that way. And they go through this process of doing all of these different things to come in contact with what's called, they call the Holy Guardian Angel. We call it your higher self. Some people call it Christ consciousness, but you're really trying to know who you really are, and not just know it, but become one with it. And to do that in one lifetime is incredibly difficult, but this is what a lot of the magicians, that was their main goal. That was the whole alchemical process.
Mm-hmm. What was one of your, like, do you have an experience of when you first started using white magic in the way that you do, where it had a very profound effect on you?
Yeah, sure. When I first started practicing ceremonial magic, I used the old, it's like an older system. It's a Golden Dawn system. It's Golden Dawn, right? Rosicrucian magic, which is based on based on a Judeo-Christian paradigm that kind of slowly opens the doors to Egyptian magic. So it starts out Judeo-Christian, and then it introduces you to the Egyptian idea, which is where a lot of people believe. And if you really studied it, you can see that it's the Horus story. It really did come from Egypt. But anyways, that's where I started. And the first thing they teach you is focus practices, visualization practices, a couple of rituals to energize yourself and also clear out bad energy. So what you're doing in the beginning is you're banishing the bad, but invoking the good. And there's two rituals. One's called the lesser banishing ritual, the pentagram, or just the ritual, the pentagram. But you can use it to pretty much clear out all the bad stuff. That's what you think it is at first, but that's not really what it is. And the middle pillar, which is kind of like a meditation that I've seen Eastern meditations where they call clearing their field, right? You've seen that diagram that has two circles, and it goes down the chakra system, right? And then it goes back around and it comes back down. That you've seen that, right? That's pretty much what the middle pillar is. So yeah. You see these things and Western occult practices that mimic stuff that, you know, practices that are taught in the East. It's just, we do it as a Western society because we understand this better, right? It's like the whole left brain and right brain thing. Mark Passio thinks that the Earth actually has a left brain and a right brain. Oh. If you look at Eastern and Western practices, they're two totally different cultures. That's and an ideas, interesting idea. And it totally relates to the brain, right? So anyway, so I used that system because I was brought up a Christian and I had faith in it, and it was already in my paradigm. So it was already in my subconscious. And when I started doing these things, that's when I started having my first out-of-body experiences. Not dreams, leaving my body, like seeing things that were happening in the real world. And didn't even realize that it was triggering these things. I had a few prophetic dreams. I had, and these were very minor things, you know. They would teach you, don't give in to astonishment, right? Because these are going to be small things in the end. Just keep writing this stuff down. And so there's no way I could go out into the public and prove this, right? That's why it's an individual journey, but I know that it's real, if that makes any sense.
It does.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're preaching to the choir here.
Well, part of the choir.
Yeah, part of the choir. But I think that's even an idea, though, that, Brian, you can get your head around.
Oh, absolutely. No, the idea I can absolutely get my head around.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you left your body, what did you see?
Well, at first, the first time I did it, I thought, I didn't know I was out of my body, but everything looked more real. The colors were more vivid. Edges were sharper. I felt very light. There was no heaviness to me. And I was thinking, I did it. I finally got out.
You were trying to get out.
Right. Oh. And I rolled, and I've been trying for years, but it wasn't until I started practicing magic that it happened, you know? And I looked back and I saw myself mouth wide open, snoring on the couch. It was disgusting looking, actually. I was like, hey, it's like, man, that's me, you know? And so I went outside, and naturally when I went outside, I was in my yard, and I was like, this feels so weird. Cause I mean, it's very hard to explain. I did not want to go back. I wanted to stay here for a while, but that's the trick. As soon as you give into astonishment or you have an expectation, everything, you wake up or you go back to your body, whatever you want to call it. But naturally the first thing I did was fly, and it was different. It wasn't the flying you do in dreams. This was a different feeling. This was something that felt like I already knew how to do it, like it was natural. And to me, that explains a lot of paranormal phenomena. I do think that there is interactions in the physical realm that a lot of people are either out of their body or either passed away, and they're kind of stuck in between realms, and they're interfering with this realm a little bit. There are certain people that can do it, just like the movie Ghost. You've seen that movie with Patrick Swayze, yeah. Right? Where that guy's like, do it from your gut, you know, and he's trying to push things. That really happens like that. You know, if you read the book of Robert Monroe, he actually learned how to pinch somebody. Dr. Stylianos Ateslas, he calls it eczematosis, but he can move things on people's dressers. And so when you are opened up to this world, then you're like, this reality that I was living in before is an illusion. And then everything gets real crazy after that, you know.
Sounds exciting. I'd love to do that. I've tried many times, but I haven't been successful.
Maybe you need to use white magic.
Yeah, I'm thinking that might be the next step.
Yeah, William Buhlman was the first person that's who, you know, I'd always listen to him. And to me, it was just a coincidence that, okay, I've been trying this forever, but now that I'm starting to do, I guess you could say, neophyte, initiatic, Western occult science practices, that these things are happening. But what continued to happen is then I started having to deal with myself, right? And this system that they take you through, you have to deal with yourself. You have to deal with your intellect, your emotions, your passions and your desires, the earthly things, you know, your financial situation. And this is the elements they send you through: earth, air, fire, and water. They send you through these initiatic systems. It's a Western system, and it's not the only system, but it's the one that kind of works for me. Because a lot of people, when I talk about this, because I was on Grimerica, and I got attacked by all kinds of different people saying that you're an elitist and this and that. And I'm like, no, this system just worked for me. I know other people that have been to Eastern mystery schools that it works for them. That is better for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's that whole like judgment, like it's gotta be one way for it to be like the right way, and not realizing that we're all individuals. We all have certain strengths or weaknesses that, you know, we need to play to, and, or we're just like, it's part of our experience. It's part of our journey for whatever reason.
I will tell everybody this though too, Nicole, if anybody doesn't believe in magic, there, Freighter Xavier has a sigil magic course, or you could just take any sigil magic course and it's harmless. Like you could write a sigil out, like, I want to manifest this, turn it into your little sigil and do what they tell you. You know, you might have to do a prayer at a certain planetary hour or something like that, and then bury it or whatever. I would suggest that anybody just do that. And I've never suggested these things before, but just try that. Do it with something harmless. Like say, I want to manifest a green ball in my yard or something, right? Something small, starting out small. And the more you want it to happen, it's not going to happen. But watch what happens when you say, man, this ain't going to work. This is stupid. I'm done. And that's when it happens.
But that's
when,
like,
you let it go.
That's like with any couple that's trying to get pregnant for 2 years, 3 years, and then they give up and then it happens.
That's magic too. See, in a magic ceremony, where you do use the male and female energy, and that is a really deep secret. That is the key to manifestation, force and form. We are living inside of that right now. I mean,
but anybody that doesn't understand, doesn't believe, doesn't want to use that word,
magic.
And it's a word that I use often. Yeah, if they don't want to use that word magic or manifestation, you call it a coincidence.
That's right.
Lisa and I were on a walk the other evening, and we were crossing the road, and a duck had been hit by a car. It was dead, but it was right in the middle. It was going to get hit again and again. You know, it was going to be a mess. So I wanted to pick it up, but I didn't want to touch my hands. I just walked all around in like a 10-foot circle, just looking for something to pick it up with, and, you know, didn't see anything. Walked across the road. We were just going to continue. And then I saw a little wire irrigation flag. So I was like, oh, I'll just use that to, you know, kind of tie it around the duck and pull it off the road. No sooner did I pick that up than I turned around where I had just been.
There was a long
wire. And there was a longer wire. I was like, oh, okay, I'll just grab that. And then I grabbed that wire and walked over to the duck. 3 feet from the duck was a huge foam pad.
Oh,
now,
some cars
now,
had passed by.
It was very windy that night. So it obviously had just blown from wherever it was. But
obviously.
But okay, come on, Nicole. Manifest, not it appears out of nowhere. It still has to come. So the physics.
What do you mean it appears out of nowhere? Of course it can appear out of nowhere. That's the
whole
point. You laughed
when I said it was windy. I mean, obviously the reason it showed up where it was is the wind blew it from wherever it was. Now, I'm not saying that to discount that it was manifested and that a power in the universe made it land where it landed, but it didn't just appear. It didn't just disappear from Australia and somebody's like, where the fuck is my foam pad? And it appeared on the road. Yeah. It was in the grass. It was rubbish. And it blew there, you know, for the need that we, you know, desired. But so to look at it and say it, you know, was magic, I think a lot of people would struggle with that. They would just say, holy shit, this thing just showed up when I needed it. How cool is that?
Right. But what was your will at that moment? That's what it's all about. Your will at that moment was to do what?
To help this dead animal, to move it, to have something to move it with, and cause and effect. But my point about a skeptic, because I am, I'm supposed to be, I play one on TV, and I know, you know, my parents and, you know, people that would just be, oh, how convenient. Oh, what a coincidence. Isn't that glad that showed up? And I won't give it any thought. I will not then dwell on it and think on it and pray on it and say, oh, wow, did I cause that to happen? No, it that just won't happen in a skeptic's mind.
But that's something that would have never have happened to you, say, a year ago. But now that you've been exposed to all these different ideas, then now that is something that crosses your mind. Like, wow, I manifested this piece of wire and this piece of cardboard or whatever it was.
Even though I say that, I'm kind of still saying it as a joke to myself.
The bigger picture, like, you are an individual form of consciousness and a larger consciousness construct that is pretty much all made up of the same thing. So when you will something to happen on this earth, it does have to come through in a certain rule form. And like I said, it really depends on who's observing it for that reason, because it doesn't want to mess up the system, like Thomas Campbell says. But it always comes, magic always comes through in a coincidence. It always appears that way. But after a certain amount of coincidences, you stop believing that it's a coincidence.
Right.
That's just, that's why they tell you to journal and dream journal and write these things down. Because when you do the math, probability is telling you that this is no longer a coincidence. And I'm not talking about 3, 4, 5, or even 10 things. When it gets up into the hundreds, then you know something's real.
And I would assume a lot of people, if you were to think about the number of coincidences that you want to label it, that happy coincidence, you know, over somebody's lifetime, it probably is in the hundreds. But you're right, you're not documenting it. You're bouncing from one to another and not remembering the one that happened a week ago or 2 days ago. And, you know, so you plod along your life and don't put it together. Don't string it together.
Unless you keep a coincidence journal.
I really would love everybody that's listening to this to try out the sigil thing just once and make it something that can't be normal, you know?
Right.
Like, don't try to manifest a certain girlfriend. Make it something small, you know? To me, that's kind of like black magic. Like, I want Nancy or whoever to fall in love with me and blah, 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 blah. Well, unless you can't force her to do that because she's her own individual being.
That's against her will, yeah.
That's against her will, right? But there are powerful enough magicians that can make that happen for you, actually. But you may not like the you know, nature is going to make it happen the way it needs to happen. And you may not like the outcome when it's all said and done. You may think you
do. Wayne Dyer.
Let's say
has a book that talks about that power of intention, basically.
Right. Yeah, he does. That's true. But let's say you do cast a spell for the perfect partner. Like, I'm ready to love somebody and be loved by the perfect person. It just sounds so, you know, that can't happen. There's nobody that's perfect. The perfect person for me. I'm ready. You can do that. To me, that's total.
You might not understand it when it shows up, you know? A guy may, you're a guy and you cast a spell and another guy shows up and he's like, and you don't understand that your spell just, it just worked. And you're just like, oh yeah, what a cool guy.
I guess I can see what you're saying with that. Yeah. Sure.
Well, but yeah, I guess
but ultimately,
you don't be careful what you ask for.
Exactly. Be careful. And this is one of the reasons why I hesitate to talk about it, because there is a lot of bad intentions going on out there, especially in the youth crowd, the child, an abused child that maybe is mad at their parents, you know, and they do a spell to wish death upon their parent. Well, these things do happen, you know. For instance, I know a person that actually did a spell to become rich, and they were being very evil about it. And you know what had to happen? A certain person in their family had to die for them to get that money, and it happened. Now, to you and I, that's a big coincidence. That person died, this person got the money, whatever. It doesn't look like anything to anybody else. But did they see, and I won't use their name, but did they see little Johnny wrapping thread around his finger at 3 o'clock in the morning?
Right, the power of intention, yeah.
Not trying to scare anybody, but it's out there.
So how do you come up with like a sigil, or like what would you suggest to our audience? Like some sort of,
well,
format?
There's lots of ways to do it. I'm no instructor, so I don't want to instruct anybody on how to do it, but you know, the way that I do it is like, say if it's, let's just say it's a financial thing and I want a certain amount of money for a project that I'm trying to do. Well, I would write on a piece of paper, you know, that, you know, I will this amount of money to happen by this date. And then you cross out all the letters. Like if there's two M's in that, you cross it out, you cross out all the vowels. And eventually after you cross out all the doubles and the vowels, you're left with just a few letters, and you make a little witchy symbol out of it that looks cool to you. And then you use the, a certain planetary alignment. You can use prayer. There's other people that you have to activate the sigil, right? There's people that use crazy methods to activate it. But me, I just use trance and focus and prayer and mantra at a certain planetary hour. And then say, if it's for an earthly reason, then I'll stack the deck on my subconscious and I will bury it in the ground, right? That's just an example. Now, It's not going to happen until I actually let it go. And I don't mean let it go, but it's still in the back of my mind. I have to move on with my life. And once I'm out of the universe's way, once I get out of the way, that's when it happens.
Yeah, like, so basically you can't obsess about it after you've done it. You just got to let go and let God, so to speak.
That's right. And that's the same thing when you're trying to discover who you are. If you're on a white magic path to discover your higher self, your holy guardian angel, you have to have a little bit of faith, and you've got to get out of the universe's way and then pay attention when it does show you things. And you got to keep a journal and a dream journal, because the mind is chaotic. So if you don't journal, you're not going to learn anything, or you're going to forget things. And so it's a lifelong study, but there's high magic and low magic. And people say, well, high magic, that's better than, what are you better than people? No, high magic is just rituals, ceremonies, or whatever practices you're doing to try to become one with your higher self. Low magic is practical magic, where you're trying to manifest certain things or protect yourself. But the cool thing is once you understand this and you wrap all, you come back to center, you come back to where you started, there really is no higher magic that I've ever found than prayer. Prayer is just as powerful as anything. Anything.
Would you say, though, it's got to be done, though, in, I guess, the issue I have with prayer is that there seems to be a misunderstanding that you don't understand that maybe some of the things, like a lot of people pray for things that are negative in their life to go away, or for illnesses to be healed. And that perhaps, say, that illness is there because it's providing a major lesson that is needed for either you or someone that you love in your life. And that actually praying for it to leave is not to the highest good of all those involved.
And sometimes I think, well, yeah, when you pray, you're focusing energy on that thing that you don't want. So if you're like praying that, you know, say your mother had cancer and your grandmother had cancer, and you're like just praying, like, I just pray to God every night that I don't get breast cancer, that I don't get breast cancer. And you're putting all this energy, focused energy, on breast cancer, which is probably going to end up showing up in your life.
Yeah, I don't mean like that type of prayer. You know, that's more of a, when you're in a state of wanting, that's the state you're going to remain in. I mean, when you do a prayer of gratitude and exaltation, it really, that to me is just as powerful. The people that believe in Jesus, you know, and they really believe in it. You know, I've seen that work. It's worked in my life. You know, I'm not that kind of a Christian anymore, but when I was, it did work because I believed in it. There were so many times when it did work. But there, if you're talking about unanswered prayers for the highest good, I would question that. Does that person really believe in what they're asking to happen, whether it's for their highest good or not? Let's just, I don't know if you guys got kids or whatever.
We do.
But if you're Brian, and but I if do. Your child comes to you and asks for something and they really, 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 really want it, and you know it's not to their highest good, but they're obsessed with it, they just can't get over it. Nobody's life can move on until they get with the fine, right? You give it to them because you love them. At least I know I do, and I know a lot of the parents do, but they still have that lesson they got to learn, you know? So prayer is more of a, in my opinion, a child to parent figure. In other words, child of the universe talking to the parent universe figure. I think anybody can have anything they want if their faith is strong enough in it. I really do believe that, because we think we know what faith is, but I don't think we do.
Yeah, it's definitely you. I think you realize that when it's really being tested. I think it's one of those things where you feel like you know it when you're all things are good. And then you realize, wow, I'm getting it tested really big right now.
Well, and it's
your parents go, this is how you pray, right? Well, no, I would say this, pray from your heart always, always, mm-hmm. and then see what happens.
Yeah. I think that's great advice. Because, I mean, that's just, we've talked about it just on a different note. Like, that's fifth dimensional, that's the fifth dimensional heart structure. That's leaving the ego and going into the place that's service to all. So that makes a lot of sense.
I will confess something here just to tell you, because you guys were talking about how it's really, you're asking for something that's not for your highest good, right? Mm-hmm. And okay, so when I was younger, everybody goes through this, that first heartbreak, right? Whether you're a girl or a boy, when you're really in love with somebody and you break up or you get dumped or whatever, everybody's been through that, right? So I remember it was raining. I was 15 years old and I ran down in the rain behind a fire station and I hid from everybody because I didn't want anybody to see me whining like a girl. That's the way I looked at it. I'm whining like a little baby girl, right? And I prayed to God, you know, please let me have her back. I'll fix this. I'll do it right. Just please. And I could even feel something inside of me going, this isn't really what's best for you. Right. But you know what? I got her back and I didn't like it. I didn't like it. So my prayer was answered, but the outcome wasn't what I expected. You see what I mean?
Yeah. Totally.
Careful what you ask for.
And that's exactly. Wow. Really quickly, because I know you got to go. Did you ever see anything in your out-of-body experiences that you wish you hadn't seen?
Oh, yeah, for sure. But, that's a whole nother story. I've talked about that on my show. But, yeah, I got into what's called a false awakening once and saw, like, a hooded being about 3 inches from my face, you know, after I finally woke up, or at least I thought I was awake. There it was. And I wished that would have never happened to me because it scarred me. And it's actually to this day prevented me from further moving along in that practice because it's still in the back of my mind. But,
If you've talked about it on our show, why don't you tell us a little bit about that and where people can go and maybe listen to that particular episode?
Well, the show, it's just called Lighting the Void, and it's at lightingthevoid.com, and that's the, it comes on Monday night through Thursday night, but live at 9 p.m. Pacific on the Fringe FM, which is the fringe.fm, but it's also in podcast form, so if anybody wants to listen to the archives. But if you believe in angels and good things and fairies and just positive beings out there in the universe, you have to understand that we're also in a universe of polarity and duality. So there are also other beings out there that are not so friendly and good. And at the end of the day, they're just really aspects of our true higher self, like at the very top. But that doesn't mean they're easy to deal with in this reality. And so we're all on this journey of discovering who we really are, whether we know it or not. And the whole point about magic and what I wanted to talk to you about, and I think we did, is that there's ways to speed it up, you know, and we've been doing it since the beginning of time. And I think it's kind of okay to talk about now.
Yeah, No, I think, I mean, go back 20 years, it was a lot harder to talk about this stuff then than it is now. Even just 5 years ago, I feel like it was still hard. I mean, maybe that's just my own personal projection, but I feel like there's so many more people kind of becoming more self-aware and questioning a lot more things and trying to figure it all out and kind of taking the journey of self more seriously, with more heart, I guess.
Right. And there's many systems out there. You don't ever have to practice magic to do this. There's Eastern systems that you can do it with religion. You can just do it scientifically, even actually. It just really depends on who you are. I just don't want, my message is to make people aware of it, and not to be so afraid of it, because you can actually empower yourself a little bit and don't become a victim to it. You know, you're being magically induced into hypnotic states of rhythm all the time by symbolism and I would say dark forms of magic, you know, every day in the media and everything that you see. So once you become aware of it, then you become empowered, and then you can really start doing some inner work.
Yeah. Oh, well, thanks so much for coming on the show. For our audience, please go check out his show, Lighting the Void. It's a great show. And I mean, I know you've been told this probably 1,000 times, but you just have the best radio voice ever. It's just so good.
I hate it. Everybody loves it, but I hate it. I really do. I hate
it. It is the perfect radio voice. It's just deep.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yes, and it's very calming, especially for like a lot of the topics that you talk about. I think it just brings a grounding effect to it all. So,
no, thank you. That's very nice of you.
Yeah. So everyone, go check out Joe's show. You can find out more information about him on his website, lightingthevoid.com, and he is available in all different podcast apps. Or you can join in live and be part of the conversation. And there's live chats and all that through, I guess, Spreaker and the Fringe.fm.
Yeah, it's got a Discord chat room in there as well. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks so much for being on the show, Joe. I learned some new stuff today, so that's great. I love that.
Oh, that's cool. Thank you for having
me. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, absolutely. And to all of our... And to all of our listeners, if you have any questions that you'd like us to ask on the air, please send them into our email, info@enlightenup.us. And if you have any guests, suggestions of someone you'd love us to bring on the show, because some of you have been writing into us and we've got some people lined up for you, or you have topic ideas that we haven't discussed yet and you're waiting to hear about, you can also send that into our email and we'd be happy to get that organized. So thanks to everyone, and thanks Joe for being on the show, and we will catch you guys all next week.